Welcome to Intelligent Medicine, America's foremost program on health, medicine, and nutrition, featuring the latest on both conventional and alternative therapies. Now, here's Dr. Ronald Hoffman.
Welcome to Intelligent Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and please join us for an hour of hopefully useful health information and your phone calls. 888-302-3684 is our number. Start dialing. You can reach me because we're live this weekend. We got lots of time to discuss your issues. And before we get to your phone calls, a little later in the program, we're going to talk about an article that I wrote for our Hoffman Center newsletter. You know, there are many articles at year's end that talk about the top 10, this, that, and the other, right? In fact, I wrote a couple of articles like that, the top 10 stories of 2015 and the top 10 podcasts of 2015. Well, I decided to flip the script for our most recent blog, which is on our website at drhoffman.com, or you would have gotten it in your inbox if you'd subscribed to the newsletter. The story is the worst health and nutrition stories of 2015, and there's some doozies, and I'll share some of that with you in just a few moments. 888-302-3684, before we get to your calls. This week was remarkable for the president's State of the Union address. And, you know, we went on and on and on reciting his accomplishments and goals for the few remaining months of his administration. And there's one line that really struck me in watching, and I was multitasking. I kind of had the TV on and I was reading articles and writing stuff. And I looked up when he said this. He said, "Let's make America the country that cures cancer once and for all." And to demonstrate his resolve, President Obama appointed the person most likely to implement this lofty goal, Vice President Joe Biden. Okay. Well, Joe Biden, well, you've got a personal dog in the fight against cancer after his son, Beau Biden, succumbed to brain cancer. But this comment struck me as extraordinarily naive, because it turns out, here's a little-known factoid. Since Dwight Eisenhower mentioned cancer in his 1954 State of the Union address, presidents have talked about curing cancer 15 times in their annual address, and President Obama himself has mentioned cancer in all but one of his State of the Union addresses. So I took that in, and then I did a little search, and I found on the internet, because everything's there on the internet, I found a headline from Reuters News Service 1971. Headline: President Nixon declares war on cancer, allocates $1.6 billion for cancer research. Well, that was in the day when $1.6 billion was real money. These days, we devote approximately, the government anyway, forget the private sector, probably a lot more in the pharmaceutical industry, but the government allocation for cancer research is about $5 billion per year. So this 1971, do the math, that's 45 years ago. And if you just do a little calculation, you'll realize that we've already spent probably over $200 billion in our quest for a, quote, cure to cancer. And none other than Dr. Otis Brawley, who's the chief medical officer of the American Cancer Society, they asked him point blank, is finding a cure for cancer realistic or merely rhetoric? And he said, is it realistic? In a word, no. And that's from the guy who's head of the American Cancer Society. He said it's important to remember there are at least 200 kinds of cancers. Finding one, quote, cure to fix them all is probably impossible. And he said, I firmly believe that 50, 100, or even 1,000 years from now, there still will be people dying of cancer. However, I do believe that we can do better to fight the disease. Okay, so, you know, I'm fresh from coming back to after doing a cancer talk, at the cancer care group in Ridgewood, New Jersey. And I got to say, you know, I schlepped out there all the way in the dark of night to the hinterlands of New Jersey. And I couldn't have found a more enthusiastic group of folks there who were very, very desirous of getting a natural perspective on cancer. And I shared with them that I really think that we are making progress in certain areas of cancer. It's just that it's not right to characterize all modern cancer treatment as, and the meme is slash burn poison, you know, that all cancer care is futile and destructive, and that we should merely be looking for alternatives with diet and, you know, various types of nutraceuticals. No, I think we need an integrative approach to cancer, because there are certain cancers where we're making extraordinary progress, and more progress will be made. But the problem is we're looking for answers in the wrong places. Our very way of life creates cancer in America. And then once we get cancer, we look for a magic bullet to cure it, you know, a pill or a treatment or some kind of immunotherapy, chemo, targeted proton beam radiation is going to zap the cancer and make it go away. And yet those therapies can be beneficial, but we got to take a more fundamental look at why we get cancer. And even once we get cancer, what are some of the natural approaches, low tech, relatively inexpensive approaches that will increase our chances of success with cancer? And it's not my intent here to run through a catalog of all these approaches, but simply combating obesity could make a difference in cancer. There's a recent story in Science Daily, why prostate cancer is more aggressive in obese patients. It turns out that the fat that surrounds the cancer promotes its spread to other parts of the body. And so we're now in an era where once you get cancer, it's not entirely sure that you even need treatment. Certain forms of cancer, early breast cancer, early prostate cancer, might be more amenable to something called active holistic surveillance, which means, you know, test, make sure it doesn't spread. But meanwhile, change your lifestyle, exercise, lose weight, get on a superb diet, take targeted nutraceuticals to pickle your body in so many healthy nutrients that the cancer won't want to even multiply and spread through your body. So that's the prospect for the future in cancer care. It's not going to be through some high-tech revolution. Well, partially, yes, but we need to take a very different approach if we're going to stem the tide of cancer in this country. And hopefully, you know, through programs like this, we'll spread awareness about the potential for some of these natural treatments. 888-302-3684 is our number. We'll start answering your phone calls in just a moment here on this weekend edition of Intelligent Medicine.
Why do I use the Spry Dental Defense System? Because it tastes great.
Because fillings are ugly.
There are a lot of reasons to use the Spry Dental Defense System, a complete line of oral care products such as toothpaste, mouthwash, gum, mints, and more, made with 100% xylitol. But the best reason is because it works. And because it's all natural, Spry is 100% safe for kids. There are even Spry products developed especially for your children and toddlers.
Because my dental hygienist told me to.
Because it's all natural.
So ask for Spry by name whenever you buy toothpaste, mouthwash, gum, mints, or anything else for your mouth. And make sure you're receiving all the benefits of 100% xylitol products.
Because I want a great smile, duh.
Why do I use Spry? Because it works?
The Spry Dental Defense System. Great taste, less fillings. For information or to purchase Spry, visit SpryDental.com.
Available at Whole Foods, Vitamin Shoppe, and other fine natural products retailers.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. Dr. Ronald Huffman with you. And one of our podcasts this week was especially good. We did a very, very interesting podcast on the subject of fibromyalgia with an integrated physician whose practice is solely devoted to treating patients with fibromyalgia, Dr. Genevra Lipton. And you can check it out at drhoffman.com, because tens of millions of Americans suffer from this achy body disorder, particularly women. And she provides specific answers and solutions a strategy for overcoming fibromyalgia, an integrative approach. Check it out at drhoffman.com. All right, let's talk to Dorothy, who's in Stratford, Connecticut. How you doing?
Okay, doctor. I'm so happy to talk to you.
Are you a Shakespeare fan? Because you got that Stratford. Do you still have that Stratford Festival, or they?
No, we don't have it anymore. They keep trying to bring it back, and it's just the town is kind of divided on it. So that's the problem. They may want to use it for something else. It's kind of a fight between two different parties. But anyway, the reason I called was I've had a very, very bad sore throat and hoarseness on and off. And I'd go to the doctors, and they would say, it's nothing, you just have a virus. But I really didn't even have a cold. So I just forget. Plus, I also have Sjogren's. So
that complicates matters. Wait, the fact that you have Sjogren's means that you have very dry tissue, dry mucous membranes. So with Sjogren's, it's very likely that you might have some throat irritation. Yeah, okay.
I had the test, and it's been GERD, okay, along with it. So, you know, the doctor, he called me back the other day, which I wasn't home, but the message was, they gave me the test for it, you know, where they stick this wire and whatever. But
it's a pH test.
Yeah, so they want to, he wants to give me a prescription, which I probably should have because I don't want that Barrett's. But I'm concerned because I also have osteoporosis, and I don't like these medicines, you know.
Right. Okay, so there are natural alternatives to taking these, you know, powerful acid-blocking medications. And it's not entirely sure that you would get better with these medications. I mean, sometimes, look, it's worth a try of the medications to see if they relieve your symptoms for a while. But the problem is, once you're on the medication, it's very hard to get off. So when you stop, your symptoms will come roaring back. So the question is whether you really need the medication or whether you're getting a rebound. There's a rebound hyperacidity where after you suppress the acid for so long, it comes back with a vengeance. So this is a really tricky thing. And a lot of people sometimes are consigned to a lifetime of dependency on these medications. They deplete magnesium. They make it create a higher risk of pneumonia. Maybe you didn't know that. They also deplete your bones, causing osteoporosis for sure. Maybe even a B12 deficiency can ensue. There's a greater risk of irritable bowel. When you go on a cruise liner, you're probably more likely to develop some sort of horrible diarrheal disease, norovirus and whatnot. So there's a lot of downsides to being on these acid-blocking medications for long term. So generally, you know, when faced with a patient like you, we use a trial of diet modification because there, you know, certain diets sometimes can help. And surprisingly, you know, a lot of people, I mean, I had a patient coming in who has terrible, terrible GERD in spite of the fact that she's been on every conceivable acid-blocking medication. I saw her this week, high dose, low dose, every single dose, and it's worse and worse and worse. Well, why is it worse and worse? She's on a bland diet. What does a bland diet consist of? It's a lot of like starchy, you know, like rice cereal and bread and, you know, stuff that's bland that's supposed to be soothing for her esophagus. But ultimately what it does is it acts like creates a fermentation vat in her gastrointestinal tract. In the absence of acidity, bacteria proliferate, they ferment the available carbohydrates and sugar, and then she is burping and bloating and discomfort and pain that's excruciating, even with the acid blocker. So the suggestion is, you know, a diet modification. We have a GERD diet at the Hoffman Center. It eliminates certain traditional food precipitants, but it also, it's a lower carb diet because carbs ferment and create bacterial overgrowth that can cause burping, belching, distension, reflux of your stomach contents. And then we might use lots of DGL. That's deglycerinated licorice. It's licorice that's got the part removed from it that might raise blood pressure. And you can suck on these. They're big lozenges. You can suck on these lozenges 8, 10, 12 times a day between meals, and it's very soothing for the esophagus. But the trick is a product called Endefen, E-N-D-E-F-E-N. We've been getting a lot of calls at our dispensary in the Hoffman Center about Endefen shipping out to a lot of listeners who've heard that it's helpful for GERD. It's one of our mainstays at the Hoffman Center because it contains soothing substances that like marshmallow extract and aloe that have a very soothing effect on the irritated esophageal mucosa. And you take it away from meals a couple of times a day. It's a powder that dissolves in water, and it's very effective for reducing inflammation and eliminates discomfort. So, you know, I would try not to get dependent on these acid-blocking medications, you know, Prevacid, Dexilant, Protonix, Nexium. These are the medications that, you know, tens of millions of Americans are hooked on, and some of them may need it, but the vast majority should probably be trying to wean themselves off. And it's tough. It's hard to wean off, but we use a protocol to gradually wean patients off these medications. All right, Judy. So, and we, but by the way, Sjogren's, that's a risk factor for esophageal irritation because you get literally a drying up of the mucosa in your swallowing mechanism. And sometimes problems with motility, things are stuck. They don't move down properly. And that's why you have discomfort. So, yeah. Well, thanks for calling. All right, let's take a call from let's share this story because we'd like to give full time to the next caller. A short story about e-cigarettes. You know, e-cigarettes are a problem because e-cigarette companies, well, you know, we think this is a preferable alternative to smoking because you don't get as much tar and you do get the nicotine, you don't get the tar, less carcinogenic. But it's a big problem because e-cigarette companies are reaching about 7 in 10 U.S. middle and high school students, according to a new survey. And they're getting more kids hooked on a nicotine habit that could ultimately result in their use of cigarettes. Besides, it concerns about the cartridges that hold nicotine and the heating element that may release harmful compounds into the lungs and that may be just as harmful or worse than cigarettes. So big problem. E-cigarettes, not for it. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.
Why do I use Clear Sinus Care? Because I like to breathe.
Because I hate having a dry nose.
There are a lot of reasons to use Clear Sinus Care, the nasal rinse and sinus spray with xylitol. But the best reason is because it works.
I use Clear because my doctor told me to.
Because it's all natural.
Clear, spelled X-L-E-A-R, moisturizes and soothes those dry and irritated sinuses. Clear Sinus Care not only helps with dry air problems, it also helps wash away pollens, pollutants, and other airborne contaminants, making your sinus passageways all clear.
Because my snoring was keeping my wife awake.
Because now I'm not all stuffed up.
And because it's all natural, Clear is 100% safe for children. The perfect way to keep your whole family healthy and breathing right. Prevent the misery and stop the suffering with Clear. That's X-L-E-A-R at clear.com and fine retailers.
Available at Whole Foods, Vitamin Shop, and other fine natural products retailers.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. Dr. Ronald Hoffman with you. 888-302-3684 is our number. And if it's impossible for you to call now, say you're in your car, or just maybe it's not working out for you, you can email us your question to radioprogram@AOL.com. And we won't send you an answer back. It'll take too much time because so many inquiries. But we will use your question as the basis for our weekly Q&A with Layla, wherein we answer listener questions that are sent to us via email, radioprogram@AOL.com, and then listen for your answer on our weekly podcast Q&A. All right, before we get to your calls, I want to share this with you because I wrote an article that went out with a newsletter this week, and you can find it at drhoffman.com. Every year I summarize the top stories and the top podcasts that we've done in the previous year. This year, which I did, and you can find my selections for that at drhoffman.com at the end of 2015. But this year I did something slightly different. In the month of January, I added an article, The Worst Health and Nutrition Stories of 2015. And among my picks are a test that will tell you how near you are to death, which was in a British tabloid, which is bogus beyond belief. Also, a story about how Ben Carson must be crazy. You know, Ben Carson, the Republican presidential candidate, like him or not, he's an eminent neurosurgeon, and he discussed the benefits of nutritional supplements that he was taking for his prostate cancer. Did you know that Ben Carson is a cancer survivor? Well, part of his program has been to take nutritional supplements, and he was criticized for having the temerity and bad judgment to talk about dietary supplements. So I guess it's sheer quackery to even suggest that dietary supplements might play a role in cancer prevention or treatment. And therefore, I would never be able to become a presidential candidate, right? I'm done. Also, another story, blaming anti-vaxxers for the measles recurrence. Is it about anti-vaxxers or other factors involved? I weigh in on that. A study was completed a couple of years ago that affirmed the benefits of chelation, but there's an article in 2015 that says, no, that can't be. And propaganda that's now being spread about bioidentical hormone treatments, that they're no good, which is surely not the case. It's just propaganda which is preparing the way for more regulation to outlaw these natural supplements. And stories that say the supplements are sending people to the hospital in droves. Au contraire, that is totally bogus. So I weigh in against on these stories in the worst health and nutrition stories of 2015. And I'll comment further in just a moment. But let's take a call from Judy. Welcome, Judy. How are you doing?
Is this me? Hi there.
Yeah, Judy. Mm-hmm.
I have a question about supplements. I take, you know, quite a few of them, but I'm always confused, and every bottle it says take with a meal. And
right.
Now, I often wonder, does this mean you take them before you start eating, or after you're done eating, or in between the meal?
Okay, it's option number three, door number three for you, because most supplements are, well, this is what happens. When you take supplements on an empty stomach, they hit your stomach before the food does, and they can sit there, and they can literally irritate your stomach.
Right.
So then you might say, well, I'll eat first, and I'll take the supplements after. Well, some supplements, like fish oil, for example, they will float on top. You ever made salad dressing, and then your homemade salad dressing, you see the oil, slick, stays on top.
Yes.
So then you'll get that burpy fish oil sensation.
Uh-huh.
Right? So you don't want to do that at the end of the meal. So what I do, and I take quite a few supplements. I estimate that I may take at a sitting like 25, 30 supplements. Seriously. But hey, I'm an integrated physician. That's my job. I take a whole lot of, like a fistful of supplements. But what I do is I'll start eating. I'll eat a little bit. And then I'll take a few supplements.
Uh-huh.
And then I'll eat some more food. And I'll use the food as kind of a ramrod to push the supplements down.
Uh-huh.
Okay? Because what you want is you want to push the supplements down with the act of swallowing. And you want to insulate your stomach from having direct contact with supplements that might potentially irritate your stomach. And that way, you move the supplements down, they admix with food. Often certain things are best absorbed with a little bit of extra fat. For example, coenzyme Q10. It's been shown just taking a coenzyme Q10 pill with water between meals, it's not as well absorbed as if you take it with a meal that has some dietary fat.
Yeah.
And similarly with lycopene, and other things that are fat-soluble nutrients, vitamin E, vitamin D, and so on.
D3. So let me get it clear. It's while you're eating, in between.
Wow.
A few bites
wow.
and take it in.
Right, yeah.
You mentioned fish oil, though. Sometimes at night I've been taking my cod liver oil, a tablespoon, before I go to bed at night.
That's not the greatest idea, because what happens is you take it on an empty stomach, and then right away you lie down, you're horizontal, and then you're going to get, that fish oil greps, it's going to just reflux up. So, no, that's not the best idea. Plus, I'm not the biggest fan of CLO, cod liver oil. I think you can get better quality, molecularly distilled fish oil, which doesn't contain, the taste of cod liver oil. Cod liver oil is a source of vitamin D and vitamin A, which is good. But if you take too much, you can actually OD, particularly on vitamin A. So I'm not a big fan of cod liver oil. It's cheap, and, people are used to it because maybe their parents shoved it down their throats when they were little. But, we've gotten past the cod liver oil era. We now have better products. So like Nordic Naturals, for example, one of our fine sponsors, they make really high quality. If you want liquid fish oil, fine, but it's liquid fish oil, not liquid cod liver oil. Okay? Take that with a meal.
Food.
Yeah, take it with a meal. Absolutely. 100%. Take it with a meal.
Okay? Well, thank you very much.
My pleasure. My pleasure. All right. Let's talk to, my namesake, Ronald from New York City. Hey, how you doing?
Yes, sir. Good afternoon. Dealing with an autoimmune condition called multiple sclerosis.
And yes, very familiar.
And I was doing the holistic swank diet, following all the nutrients and all the holistic supplements, but they want to put me on some conventional medications now.
Well, hang on there. You're talking about a diet that's kind of, it's so 1980s. That's the swank diet. The swank diet is, it was very well researched, but it's kind of researched in a way that wasn't that rigorous. It was a diet that was a very low fat diet. And, I follow the works of Dr. Swank, and finally I heard him speak, who's quite elderly, and I thought, wow, this is kind of interesting, but I just don't think his scientific methods are that rigorous. And maybe the Swank diet represents an improvement over the standard American diet with a lot of junk. It eliminates a lot of probably poor quality foods, but it really is not the best diet for multiple sclerosis. The best type of diet for multiple sclerosis I have found is something like a paleo diet. It's very much like a diet that I'm now exploring for myself, which is the Whole30 diet, where there's virtually no grains. There's no grains, period. There's no sweets. There's no alcohol. There are no legumes even, because legumes may have an immunological effect. They're relatively domesticated foods. The idea is to go back to, maybe 10,000 BC before we had domesticated foods, and we eat fish, chicken, eggs, meat, lots of vegetables, maybe some, tubers like sweet potatoes for carbs. And that's a diet which I find very helpful for MS patients. Now, I can't really comment on whether it would be to your advantage to take some of the medications out there. Medications can be helpful for MS, but to date, there is no single medication which is curative. Most of the medications offer some potentially a slowing down effect on MS, but often patients become resistant to them, or the side effects make it impossible for them to continue. So, I have many MS patients. The vast majority are women, but there's some men. And they do really well with a dietary approach and with certain supplements, especially high-dose vitamin D has been found to be helpful. And we're talking maybe 10,000 to 15,000 a day, which has been proven in a recent study to be safe and effective for MS. And even neurologists are now attuned to that. There's some buy-in. Omega-3 fatty acids are good for the brain. And, there's a whole variety of supplements that can be taken, and too numerous for me to recount right here. But the diet to follow, and there's a diet that's out there, is Ronald, it's the Walls diet, WAHLS. And it's a diet that was popularized by a physician, Dr. Walls, who herself had MS, and she was faced with some really debilitating symptoms. She failed to respond to medications. She was kind of desperate. She did some research. She got off her meds, went on the diet, and now she's in a really very successful remission from MS. And the website and the information that she provides is very structured and very user-friendly for patients who have MS who want to try the diet. So check it out. The Walls diet is the diet that you want to try, Ron. Okay.
Doctor.
Yeah,
have
sure.
Have a great one.
Yeah,
bye.
My pleasure. That's the way to go. Okay. Thanks for your call. And when we return, I'm going to talk about one particular health and nutrition story of 2015, which I think is the worst of the worst. We'll be right back with more of Intelligent Medicine.
Staying healthy and building immunity begins in your gut, where an amazing 70% of your immune cells reside. So keeping your digestive tract healthy is imperative for ideal health. I'm Dr. Fred Pescatore, author and science advisor for Dr. O'Hara's Probiotics. And there's no better way to improve your digestive health than taking a high-quality probiotic. I recommend taking Dr. O'Hara's every day to rev up the immune system, because it has carefully selected strains of beneficial bacteria that work synergistically to maximize health and improve immunity. His exclusive formula delivers live, beneficial bacteria that are easily absorbed and provides optimal digestive support, boosts immunity, and increases energy through better absorption of nutrients. Backed by over 25 years of scientific research, I believe that Dr. O'Hara's probiotic is the most powerful and effective probiotic available. Discover the Dr. O'Hara difference.
Dr. O'Hara's probiotics are available at Vitamin Shoppe, Whole Foods, Sprouts, and other fine health food stores nationwide.
Heart disease is the number one killer in America, but you don't need to become a statistic. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and we'd like to share with you that one of the best ways that I found to support heart health is by taking Kyolic Aged Garlic Extract. Backed by more than 700 peer-reviewed studies, Kyolic provides powerful antioxidants that help keep your arteries healthy. It reduces homocysteine, a risk factor for heart disease. Kyolic Aged Garlic Extract has also been shown to support healthy cholesterol levels and proper circulation. With all of these heart-healthy benefits, it's no surprise that Kyolic Aged Garlic Extract is the best-selling garlic supplement in the world. Unlike other garlic products, Kyolic Aged Garlic Extract is completely odorless and won't upset your stomach. Made from 100% organically grown garlic, I recommend taking Kyolic daily as part of a heart-healthy lifestyle. Kyolic Aged Garlic Extract is available at Vitamin Shoppe, Whole Foods, Sprouts, GNC, and fine health food stores nationwide.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. In my article, The Worst Health and Nutrition Stories of 2015, which you can find at drhoffman.com, perhaps the worst story is a story that I got from U.S. News and World Report's wellness section that rates the best diets overall. U.S. News and World Report, who reads that anymore? And the wellness section probably is populated by four part-time science writers sitting around in their underwear in front of a computer in their mother's basements. The bias of this rating of 38 popular diets is clearly indicated by the fact that the paleo diet, which I keep talking about, you know, I've answered many questions by saying, go on a paleo diet. It's very therapeutic. For MS, can't beat it. Is rated number 37 out of 38, almost dead last. And the worst position, 38 out of 38, is occupied by the popular Whole 30 diet, which I'm actually test driving this month. And you can read about my experience with it at drhoffman.com. And I'm going to write another blog in a couple of weeks when I complete my Whole 30 experience. U.S. News and World Reports slams the Whole 30 diet in strident terms. No independent research, nonsensical claims, extreme, restrictive. And they said that it ties with the Atkins diet as the worst of the worst for healthy eating. Well, what do they know about the Atkins diet? Their bias is clearly indicated because what do they rate highly? It's the low-fat DASH diet, which is so 1980s. It's endorsed by the American Heart Association, based largely on plentiful whole grains and starches, lots of fruits and vegetables. That's okay. Drastic restriction of sodium and cholesterol, animal protein, cut way down on saturated fat. That is a real outmoded diet approach. And to prove what I'm talking about, I cite a study which just came out this January from the Children's Hospital Research Center in Oakland. Higher fat variation of DASH diet lowers blood pressure, triglycerides. So it turns out that the DASH diet doesn't do such a good job. The DASH diet is designed to treat hypertension. It stands for Dietary Approaches to Stop Hypertension. It's a very popular diet based on the old dogma that we have to restrict saturated fat and animal protein in order to combat hypertension and cardiovascular risk. Well, when you add more fat to the DASH diet, it actually even works better. And it doesn't raise the LDL cholesterol. All that added fat does not have a negative effect. They added full-fat dairy instead of low-fat dairy foods in the DASH diet. And what they found was the results were actually even better than with the conventional DASH diet. So why, oh why, is the scientific establishment and their aiders and abettors in the world of, I'm putting quotations or marks around this, journalism, junk journalism, I call it, still dusting off this fusty old diet and telling people that that's the best diet to follow. I cannot fathom why. All right, let's talk to Diane in New York City. How are you doing, Diane?
Well, hi. I recently had a colonoscopy, and the doctor said he burned out two precancerous polyps. He told me I had been avoiding grains and eating a lot of vegetables. He told me that wasn't enough fiber. I should eat these high fiber cereals, which I started to do, and actually now I don't have a problem because I was, you know, having these very thin, you know, whatever.
And so you're having constipation, and it was relieved by putting grains back in your diet?
Yeah, and high fiber. And
okay.
The thing with it, but yet, you know, I keep hearing that, you know, grains are not to be, you know, really not good to use.
So let me address that. Look, I think that you could get the same benefits. Say you prefer not to have grains, like on a Whole30 diet. I'm currently test driving the Whole30 diet. I'm not having any grains, but I'm having a ton of fiber. The fiber is coming from sources like fresh fruits. I'm using shredded coconut for fiber. I'm using giant salads, lots of cooked vegetables, soups that contain carrots and turnips. And, you know, I'm using potatoes and sweet potatoes, which are generous sources of fiber. So I don't think you necessarily need to take, added fiber from whole grains. And maybe you're skimping on your vegetables. If you're constipated, you can, take some additional magnesium to move things along. If you have diverticulitis or you don't have diverticulitis, but you might have diverticular disease, these small outpockings in the intestine, which are the result of chronic constipation. The type of diet that the Africans consume, where Colin Burkitt first characterized the relationship between diet and diverticular disease. Diverticular disease is virtually unknown in Africa. And Africans in hunter-gatherer societies have not really been exposed to Western grains. They eat a lot of root vegetables. They eat tons of vegetables. They get some meat. But bread is not a particular staple in African communities, rural communities where, you know, they're close to their ancestry. So yeah, I think you could do fine without grains. If you choose to include grains and you're okay with grains, yeah, eat whole grains, eat, brown rice. Don't eat a lot of bread and flour products because it concentrates the starch and the carbohydrates. You eat millet, if you're not intolerant to gluten family, you can have barley. You can have wheat berries or bulgur wheat if you're not allergic to it. That would be okay. Give it a shot.
Because I was eating a lot of vegetables and all that, but you know, it didn't.
Yeah, but it's not necessarily a merit system. I don't know why you got these precancerous lesions. But by the way, even the term precancerous is wrong, because the vast majority of quote benign tumors. You know, they use the word tumor. You know, tumor like suggests cancer potential. They don't grow into cancer. So to say that they're precancerous, it may not have been precancerous. It's just a precaution because a very small percentage of them evolve into cancer. I wouldn't worry about it. Let's talk to Al in the closing moments of our program. Al, you've been waiting a long time. You're from Brooklyn. How are you?
Okay. I am holding in my hand something which says balance your pH. How can
right.
I booster?
Yeah.
My concern...
Yeah, go ahead.
My concern is, doesn't the stomach need to have some acid?
You're right. You know, by taking alkaline substances into our stomach, we neutralize our stomach acid. And as you get older, the potency of your stomach acid secretion declines anyway. And I think that we've gone over the top in this desire to alkalinize. I think that, eating lots of fresh fruits and vegetables will help to create a more alkaline balance, will combat excess acidity in the body. But there's much more to that than just taking some kind of like bicarbonate or something like that. It involves exercise and involves proper circulation. And overall health is reflected by that. And, you know, there's no magic pill that's going to make you more alkaline. Thank you very much for joining us. Make sure that you check out our newsletter and our podcasts. This program is just the tip of the iceberg of the intelligent medicine phenomenon. Please subscribe to our newsletter and have yourselves a great weekend. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and Till next week, this is Intelligent Medicine.